to you by Extend Technologies, XTENDAV.com. That's XTENDAV.com. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi. Uh-oh.
What do you got?
I think my Facebook got hacked.
Boom shakalaka.
What do you mean by that? Because I've seen people throw that a lot.
Yeah, how does
on
it happen?
Facebook.
I think my Facebook got hacked.
And a lot of time it just means you what? Got mirrored.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
Mirrored means they have taken all the things from your profile and tried to make a new profile and friend request people off of yours, like you're you. But it's a totally separate. You still have access to your
profile. It just
profile.
Says no. Your content's not available.
Oh, you have no access to your profile right now?
Huh.
Do you have access to your profile?
No.
Yeah, and I'm looking. There are no posts
Russia's
or anything.
Got you, dude.
Oh, no!
You've got no photos.
You
Let
have...
me view your story, please. Oh, I was hoping it was Bitcoin. It's not. It's Michael Stanley. So, is the Michael Stanley estate up to something here? How is that the only thing that's
it's
around?
It's the 3rd year anniversary.
It's time to start a new Facebook.
Yep.
Is it, though?
Yeah, why not? Man, that sucks. I used to wish everybody happy birthday and everything.
All the dead people.
Wait a minute. I didn't think about this. Is there a point? Is there a chance I got kicked off?
Oh.
Because I wish a lot of people happy birthday, and I wonder if they think I'm a bot.
Well, are you just using the boilerplate, happy birthday? Happy birthday.
I put happy birthday with exclamation points and put their name.
Yeah.
Well, then that's not a bot.
And if it's someone you know, you write.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Huh. I wonder if I got hacked.
So maybe it's just a downtime right now with Facebook. Maybe they're having issues.
Maybe Facebook's down. Is Facebook down?
I don't know.
Maybe Facebook. I mean, I'm on mine.
Are you on yours, Tone?
I am not an active Facebooker.
Oh, wait. No, it says something went wrong. Try again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm so
my You're back in it.
Am I down?
Now
I'm
I
down.
Can't write my political views.
Oh.
Yeah. Now I can't weigh in on what the Supreme Court said.
We are... Wait a minute. Wrong school. All right. Hi. Okay. That makes me feel a little bit better. Anyway, Tone, tell everybody. Well, Owen has a story to tell. Do I have to watch this video? I should watch this video, right? Of this kid?
The wrestling thing.
Okay.
Yeah,
so we got a couple of things. First off, Michael Stanley, today is the 3rd anniversary of his passing. I remember exactly where I was when he passed. I remember exactly how I reacted. Lyman, it was a delayed reaction. I'm having delayed reactions to, I have delayed reactions to to bad news. Does that make any sense to you? So, like, when my mom died, I remember how that was, but I went downstairs. Because I'm like, you have to compose yourself before you take care of any of this, Kenny. You really need to, you know what I mean? So I'm like, okay. So I do all that, and that's fine. But then, like, later on, I think I have a reaction. So, when Michael died, I remember I was playing like NASCAR, and I said, just real quick, when I was texted, I go, wow. And I was like, man, that's, jeez. And I remember I was like, well, I know he was sick, and that's a shame. And then like 2 hours later, I was like coming apart in my truck when he died. Like it took so much, took a minute to sink in. Like he's really gone, and he's never coming back. And I've told you I've had dreams about him before. Where he appeared in that one dream on the elevator right out here, which was cool. And he was in another dream as well, which was
Is that why I got stuck in the elevator?
I don't know, but there was one other dream that was exactly like my mother's. But I was talking to Michael, and he was in heaven, and it was exactly like he was coming down from heaven. It was weird. It was a weird dream. I mean, they're dreams, right? But there was another dream where he walks by, like, we're at, for whatever reason, the station at a loading dock, and it was you, me, Kenny, Micah Manis, and we were like sitting on the edge of the loading dock and our feet were hanging over. And then Michael walked by, did not acknowledge us, did not talk to us. We were like, Michael, nothing. And then I had the dream about the elevator. And so there we are. So I didn't know very much about that. I didn't react. I didn't give the type of reaction that I think maybe I should have at the very moment. But I remember 2 hours later, because it was a Saturday when he passed away, I just came apart, Tone. Totally apart. It was tough.
I had an experience when Kobe died, and my phone blew up because people knew I was such a Kobe fan.
I thought you'd be in shambles.
It was the opposite. I didn't have the visceral reaction. I was just like, oh, I wasn't friends with Kobe. I didn't see him from day to day.
Yeah.
He was just this mythical figure to me that I had just fell in love with from his first preseason game that I saw.
You were not moved by celebrity.
And so the death part of it was like, he's going to be in my life as much now as he was yesterday.
Yeah.
And the next day, meaning he doesn't play basketball anymore. I knew he was doing other things with movies and production and his, you know, autobiography and all this stuff he was looking to do. But outside of that, like, I got out of the Kobe relationship that I wanted. I got to watch him play basketball, and I enjoyed his success, and this is a psychotic figure. Like, unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, what happened in Eagle, Colorado is also, you know, on that biography as well. He's done. He's not an NBA player anymore. Doesn't mean as much to me. I'm not one of those guys. I know there's a whole cottage industry of former Cleveland players that'll sign autographs, that go to this, go to that. None of that stuff does anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're done playing, and I hate to kind of chew them up and spit them out like that, but, you know, they don't really care about you either sometimes. So I know that is that's a horrible way to look at things. I know guys to this day go to fantasy camp out in Arizona, and that is their year, their yeah. dream come true, meeting the guys that they watched. That'll never be that way for me. Maybe it's because I'm in the business, so I've gotten to know these guys and gotten to know the good and the bad, a lot of the bad. And mm-hmm. so I don't have that hero worship with these guys anymore, so I don't think I'll ever have the reaction to that. Other than, oh, that guy's not living anymore.
I don't know if I will. I think you're right. I think my last one might have been Tom Petty. John Dunsworth. But I interviewed him. I felt bad. Because John Dunsworth is the guy who plays Jim Leahy on Trailer Park Boys, which is, I mean, people can whatever. I was a big fan of Jim Leahy, of John Dunsworth. And so I was sad about that. Dale Earnhardt, but I've told that story. I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
So I was a child when that happened.
Well, I think about it. Just this job in general may have something to do with it. Rob Schneider, it's one of like the more recognizable comedy figures.
He's dead?
No,
he's still alive.
But what I'm saying is when he came in studio, and he was so aloof, and there was no connection. When we don't do the fake, hey, how's it going? Like, we're just going to be normal like you're anybody else. And I was like, man, this guy seems sad.
He's a comedian.
This guy
is, a lot of them are.
And he's on the road and having to do shows. He probably never thought at this stage of his career he'd have to go beg to do morning radio.
Can do it every morning, yeah.
Remember he brought that, like, tea machine thing
I'll
or whatever
forget
it was?
About the tea machine. And I'm like, man, this is a guy that just as a young person when SNL was one of the biggest things going, and he was also doing movies and TV, he was one of the more recognizable comic figures out there, and now at later stage of his career, he's just showing up in our studio and mm-hmm. not really making nice. I'm like, man, you just don't want to meet the guys.
Actually, I have a better memory of him than you do. I thought he was nicer than you recollect him.
He's fine. I think he was just being himself at this point, and why he doesn't need new friends. It's not like whatever. But all I'm saying is that I don't sit there and do the remember when and this was awesome and. Now you're just this. You're just this guy who's just not nearly as interesting. And of course, now he does a lot of political humor.
Yeah,
Which you might be able to see on
he
certain.
He hosted yeah. New Year's Rockin' or the other one, the country one.
Oh, he did.
Yeah,
Rob Schneider did
because his daughter. He didn't host it. His daughter.
His
hosted
daughter.
It
was an act. Yeah,
but she was or he was part of it. Yeah.
All right. Well, good for him. That's cool.
So, long story short, I don't think when you're this age. Like, you don't need role models anymore. You don't need posters on your wall.
Fair.
Like, that stuff is supposed to end. So I am, though, secretly envious of the people that still get to watch sports in that way, that's still at an older age, like, love these athletes. That's gone. That boyhood stuff, that's totally gone with me.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's kind of sad. Does that mean I can ever be as big a fan as I once was of all this stuff?
Probably not. Because once you see how the sausage is made, it's different. But also, I think it could be a little bit better because then you know there's certain, it's a little bit more explainable why teams struggle, why teams are better, why teams are worse. You realize, but to some people, it just seems to be, especially the younger ones, it seems to be a cop out or a fake. When I sit there and I say that, guys, the predominant amount of teams in the NFL are just lipstick on a hog, and they're not very good organizations. They just think I'm making excuses for the Browns because of where we're at. I'm going, no, man, you really got to, some of these teams, how many years, you're seeing the warts a bit of Jim Irsay, right? You're seeing that. That was no different 20 years ago. It's just they had Peyton Manning. Then they had Andrew Luck. It was able to cover that up. You know, Trevor Lawrence was supposed to cover up some of the ills of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, that's why you go get quarterbacks, because they are the first thing you see, good or bad. And so they're supposed to cover that up and transform you to a winning organization where you didn't do anything different, or what you did different might not have been the most successful thing, but you have a guy like that. Like, what situation were the Chiefs in? Chiefs are a bad example because they had Alex Smith, but it wasn't that long ago when the Chiefs were...
10 years ago,
when Romeo was
tragedy
the coach?
Happened.
Yeah. I mean, there was some ugly stuff that was going on with the Chiefs some years ago, and they were not a good franchise. They were not very winning.
The Patriot way evaporated as quickly as anything I've ever seen, and I bought into it. And I bought into the Patriot way's different, that they have a different setup there, and it's to be admired. And now you're looking back on, man, the Browns right now have a better organization than what the Patriots have had over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. You make the argument there. So I think that when you find that out, it changes your perspective on sports. It changes yours, at least on professional sports. And it's fun, but it's also a little bit more challenging because there's people just simply don't believe you, and they don't want to accept it. And usually it's people younger. Usually it's people younger than us, just like I was when I was in my early 20s. And even when I started The Fan, I was a little naive to a lot of things out there. You had a Michael Stanley story, Owen?
Yeah.
Go ahead. So, yeah, because you're from Oklahoma.
Michael is not this mythical being to me. I didn't grow up with that, right? I didn't know about his career beforehand. And I only ever met him. I knew him as the afternoon guy on NCX. And then I did nights after. Well, I was on the morning show for a minute, and then I got banished to the night show.
Banished?
During that time, Michael would come back, and we'd talk about fantasy football all the time. And at that point, I was playing the walk-up music for the Indians. So I had a job over there playing the walk-up music, and at the end of every win, you play Cleveland Rocks followed by My Town, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I know Cleveland Rocks. I've watched Drew Carey's show. I know that song. And then I was like, oh, some local song that we play. Have no clue who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day I'm talking to Michael about fantasy football or kids or whatever. And I go, Michael, what'd you do before radio? And he goes, I was in a band.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah. I go pretty big, because we were talking about Tulsa. And he goes, Kane's Ballroom, loved it. That's like the place where I spent my teen years watching bands and stuff. And he started talking about that, and I go, oh, do you have anything I might know? And he was like, we had a pretty big song called My Town. I go, that's crazy. I work over at the ballpark. We play a song called My Town.
That's great.
He goes, yeah, that's my song. And I was like, oh, you're kind of a big deal. But then after that, so then I became
that
like...
That is great.
And that's when, at that point, I didn't know my mother-in-law loved him as much as she did. And so then I'm telling her this story, and she goes, you know Michael Stanley? And I'm like, yeah, I've talked to him every day for the last 6 months. She's like, that was where she was like, hey, I've got these albums. Can you get him to sign this stuff? And I was like, if you walk, she works right over here, right across from Hofbräu House.
Yeah.
So she drives down Huron all the time. I'm like, if you drive down Huron at... whatever, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you will see Michael Stanley out there.
Yeah.
It'll happen. And so then
you'll come out and have a cigarette.
Her and her girlfriends would walk over. They would take their extended lunch break and do their walks and walk over here to see him. And she was like, she never had the guts to go up and talk to him. But just tell her that or tell Michael that I'm your son-in-law, and he will talk to you. Like, he is cool.
That's great.
I bet
that
you.
That is awesome.
I bet you, though, that's got to be cool in a way because, you know, guys like Michael Stanley are pestered.
Right.
And you have to play nice. And even if you're the nicest guy in the world, eventually you're going to be annoyed by some of the tactics. People bothering you at dinner, that's the worst. Guys are eating. They do not want to be bothered. But
I've
they
never
have
been
to,
bothered for whatever reason.
But they have to be nice. No. Who would bother us? No. But I mean,
there's been people who have approached me at dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have never been bothered.
I think you would if it was 100% of your dinners getting... And that's what happens. These guys go to restaurants. They'll go to the nice restaurants in whatever town. And if it's every time, I think you would get annoyed.
See, I go to eventually. KFC, so...
Even if you're nice about it, you know, you're going to get annoyed eventually. So I wonder if he got a kick out of the fact that he got to explain... Yeah. Yeah, you know, I had this career. And you have no idea who I am. Like, what? That kind of brings you back. It kind of grounds you a little bit.
That's
too.
Fun.
That was regional radio still, yep. You know, where the and, you know, probably was played in. I mean,
well,
obviously,
was MTV.
He was in Tulsa.
Yeah.
But that was. He was on MTV in a time
when
where I was not watching. You know, I was not watching. I didn't really get there until Beavis and Butthead. That was right around when I got to MTV.
Yeah.
So,
well, Conan O'Brien just told a story recently on his podcast where he was at a function, and I think it was Goodell was with John Elway. And Roger Goodell came over and went on and on about how much he loved Conan. And so he knew he was a fan. Like, he was legitimately a fan. I think he even might have referenced... SNL.
January Jones.
Whatever.
The Bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right. John Elway was kind of not involved in the conversation. And then Elway came up to him and goes, a big fan. And Conan said it was in a way where he knew John Elway had no idea who he was.
That's
so
good.
Now, you think about how big John Elway is. I mean, he was one of the big NFL figures for many years and then went on to have a prominent role in the NFL. And it kind of seems like that was John Elway's life. Football was for so many years what John Elway had. John Elway didn't know who Conan O'Brien was. And I wonder if for Conan O'Brien, that's I'm not going to be bothered by everybody. Kind of puts you in your place a little bit. Like, not everybody knows who you are.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
Conan's
one of the most recognizable figures in TV because of the way he looks, too.
I also thought it was special.
His stature and everything.
Oh, God, yeah, he's like 6'6", isn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's very special where I don't think you get this as much. Like, there are pop artists and things like, I don't know what to do in music anymore, man. Like, it seems to be like there's a million of them in one hits. And then, you know, the internet gets very big on a few of them. It's very odd. Like, it was easier to keep track of back in the day. I don't think there's as many regional, like, Donny Iris is in Pittsburgh.
Right.
Was Donny Iris, like, a megastar? No.
No, but people knew he was.
Exactly. And I'm sure he's beloved in Pittsburgh. And, like, Michael was beloved here. And who was it they have in Chicago? It was like the old 97 or something like that, which I don't mean to be disrespectful. Like, there's every city had like a band where it's like, hey, they popped, but it wasn't this biggest, like, they didn't become Springsteen. They didn't become, you know what I mean?
Cleveland had OAR in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Columbus and Cleveland,
yeah,
really. They had members from both Columbus and Cleveland.
I just call them Ords to bother my friends.
They played Madison Square Garden, and yet for the rest of eternity, for the people that were in college when Crazy Game of Poker, like, those guys, if you ever become really rich, you'd probably say, hey, OAR, can you get together and come play at our play at our house? Because that's what Michael Stanley would do. He wouldn't talk about it. He wouldn't want to talk about it that much. But there was a family in Colorado that... I'll just say big payday, and Michael's like, here's the deal. I'll do it for wildly less money than I should, but you got to fly everybody out. You got to feed everybody. You got to put everybody up. And the guy's like, I have 15 houses. I have 15 rooms in my house.
Yeah.
Like, 15 bedrooms.
That's amazing.
He's like, I'll kick out my family, and they can all stay.
Well, that's...
And that's what he did. And Michael Stanley did this. He did this like 4 times. With this family in Colorado, that they were from Cleveland, guy hit it big, had a mansion, and had Michael Stanley come to his party and flew people from all over the country.
That's amazing.
That's great. Like, you hear, Dana Carvey has been on record as he doesn't need to do tours and everything. I think he's...
Because he does corporate?
Because he does corporate gigs. Yeah. He's like, he doesn't come in for less than $25,000.
That's got to be hard.
He goes, I know I'm going in, no one cares, I'm going to bomb... They're eating. He goes, you got to learn to find out about the CEO and the thing that he, like, you know, everybody cracks on him for. Yeah. But he's like, but the paydays, like, you got to take those.
How do you not? What did you want to tell us about the scoring coming down in the NBA?
Just quickly, I don't know if people have noticed this, and especially if you saw that Knicks-Cavs game the other day, the scoring's plummeted in the last month. And
wasn't it by a point?
And it's that's a huge at this stage of the season.
Oh yeah, okay.
That's actually a really big. And so people were wondering, well, where did this come from? It was easy. Referees are not calling the fouls, so everybody was up in arms. And then it reached that point, All-Star Weekend, where everyone's like, nobody plays defense in the NBA. It's a 3-point shootout. Scoring is too high, and now it doesn't mean anything. The possessions are too many possessions in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's averaging, I think right now there's 15 guys averaging 25 points or more. If you go back to when Kobe played, there were 4 or 5. So it doesn't mean as much. The stats are inflated. The points per game are inflated. The results are just whether you hit a bunch of threes. It's not even who played the better game. Mm-hmm. It's kind of made the game bland. And everybody started speaking out, some of the guys with national platforms, some of the ex-players, and I think the owners and the GMs were telling the NBA, we can't continue this. We've got to crack down. Well, how can you do it without changing your rules, and how do you change your rules midseason? You don't change any rules. It's your enforcement of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
They've called less fouls, so you're not getting rewarded. The foul merchant stuff that Trae Young and James Harden made famous, not able to get away with it.
I really like people are going to start.
How they call it in the playoffs. Yeah. All they did was regular season. It up.
Yeah.
They moved it up and they're seeing the difference.
You
already.
Know what? I think you're right. I think it's justified. And I think it's, I don't think it's as nefarious. Some people might make it out to be nefarious and gaming the system. I don't. I think it's the same way as like speed traps. You know, there's certain times of the month where they patrol, and there's certain times of the month when
that's
they don't.
It's a great analogy.
And a cop will, you know, when we, I told you in the borough, when we widened 14, we had a run of, there was a couple of wrecks like right by my house because there were people trying to pass in the middle lane.
Yeah.
Which is extremely dangerous. And so they got a couple of cops sitting up there until it kind of cooled off. And then, and then, you know, maybe they sat up there again, you know. So it's one of them things where it kind of comes and it goes. They do that in real life. They do that with the law. You know, you hear about certain things that happen in certain cities. All right, the FBI is going to get involved again. Goes away. And then after a couple years or a year, then it'll start back up again. And I think it's the same way in professional sports and sports
that,
in general.
I love that as an analog because I do not like dealing in absolutes. It's one of the things, like in political talk, I hate.
But you want robot umpires, which will absolutely be in absolutes.
I'm ready for it. And the chain gang. Although I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss some of the theater.
Wait, I'm losing my job?
You're done. You're out.
No, you'll be fine. You better learn how to code. Wait a minute. They bitch our ears off about putting shot clocks in. You think they're going to be able to pay for that?
It's 11011 down?
I love it. By the way, you weren't here last Thursday. We had Sean Spencer on, the head coach at Rhodes High School, the basketball coach, and he brought up shot clocks. And I just want to laugh because I texted him after. I go, do you understand anytime we bring up shot clocks, I mean, the people who start rattling the cups about, we can't afford them.
People that's not their job to afford them.
Oh, my God. And I went like, I was going two years ago, there was a situation, you and I got in an argument about shot clocks, and I was going toe-to-toe with people about the shot clock cost, the whole thing. It was a mess. He was laughing his ass off. Because, I mean, here's a guy with Cleveland Metropolitan School District. Like, we're looking forward to shot clocks. Can't wait. Wait a minute here. Like this, he was laughing his ass off at it. What were you saying?
I'll just say quickly, not to get too nitty gritty. I'm curious to see if you're going to allow more physical play like they do in the playoffs. The guys that impacts, the Darius Garlands of the world, who, you know, they like to play without contact.
Uh-huh.
Their freedom of movement stuff has certainly benefited players like Trae Young. Donovan Mitchell's interesting. He's built like a free safety, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a good figure on him, but he's only 6'1". So again, like this league in the playoffs always favor 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", 6'10".
Contact.
Those guys who can, you know, Luka Doncic, he doesn't care if you check him, if you put a forearm into him from the moment you pass half court, he's going to figure out He's going to get you off balance. He's going to seal you off. He's got great footwork. So contact, he plays through contact. He has, I was telling you about the D-cell move, which is now one of the big moves that the better scores are doing, where they look like they're coming fast, and then they put the brakes on, and you're over here, and he's shooting an easy 10-footer over here. How did the Cavs respond? We saw they did not respond very well to a playoff-like game in terms of physicality the other night. How does a team like the Cavs deal with increased physicality if the referees are going to allow it? It's kind of the game within the game that I'm curious to see down the stretch.
Well, I don't know. That means they're just going to have to be tougher if they're going to do it that way, because you got dimed out to the point where, like, we played that FAN audio at the end of the show today. We had no retort.
I felt bad.
I had nothing to say.
You know what? We should not have played the audio. Not because we're trying to protect the Cavs.
Good. Loss for Mitch.
Mitch, that's a loss.
Only, 1-1.
Only because me and you sat there as if we had never hosted a radio show in our lives. As if we've never been mean before. We've been mean. People were tweeting us going, you guys have been plenty mean. You've gone after other show hosts. And I said, yeah, we don't do a lot of that fake our city versus your city. But when the Knicks announcer, when their radio guy is saying, we know who the Cavs daddy is, I'm sitting there going, that's so lame. I have no retort, though. I have nothing. And the Cavs have taken away my retort.
I think he might be a little bit, like, I don't think Evan Roberts would have any problem admitting he's probably a little bit more corny than you. I mean, honestly, like, yeah, who's your daddy stuff is, like, that's from 1997. But I have no problem with that guy. And I hope if he hears this, I hope he doesn't take it the right way. I think that's just his way of talking. I accidentally said off the chain the other day, and I felt bad about it. I go, you don't say that. Don't say that. And I said it in a different context of what it is. But I was trying to say that somebody was unhinged, and I accidentally said that, and I felt weird about saying it. But I've listened to Evan Roberts for a long time. That's kind of the quirks that he has.
I've listened to Evan, too. I've sat there kind of miserable going, our listeners want us to take up for the city.
We can't.
And I cannot.
Not with the Knicks.
I simply cannot. So
I don't need to take up for the city. The team needs to take up for him. And when the team takes up for him, then I can back it up.
It's not our job to talk it. Like, it's their job to have something for us to crow about.
Yeah.
When we had LeBron, we had no shortage of cocky shows. Yeah. And we were doing pep rallies for really, really 4 years. Three, to be sure. And then that last year, we kind of knew. When we went 7 games versus, of all teams, the Indiana Pacers, I'm like, uh-oh. This is
not the same.
But when you have LeBron, it's
still
easy.
Still went to the finals.
When you have Patrick Mahomes, easiest in the world, if you're doing radio in Kansas City, to mock anybody that's saying you can't do this and you can't do that. Well, we had LeBron. We had the bully on the block. And we had a way to rip into anybody else that doubted him. We don't have... It's just those guys don't come by often.
Didn't we go 12-0 in the postseason before the finals?
Yes.
That's amazing. Shows how bad the rest of the East was, but that's amazing.
Well, Atlanta won 60 games, and we rifled right through it.
64, I believe.
Table the Streetsboro thing until Thursday, because I want to watch that video first.
I just watched the video, and now I want to talk about it badly, but I think we might have to save it for the show.
Can we save it for Thursday? Because I haven't seen it yet.
Or the podcast. It'll be over by then.
No, but that
Thursday is weigh-ins, guys.
Well,
Well,
we can talk about it Thursday. I didn't get to see. Fine, then talk about
thing. Let's do it.
I got one more thing to bring up before we go.
Go ahead.
I have a little bit of a bone to pick with the end of Goodfellas.
Okay.
Which I am getting people saying that we should do a deep dive into The Sopranos, even though every other show in the world has done a deep dive into The Sopranos.
And
I just don't want to do it.
Saying we'll never do that.
I just don't want to do it unless you guys are in on it. If you guys aren't in on it, I'm not going to force the issue.
Well, it's one of my favorite movies ever.
Shows, Sopranos.
I'm sorry. I said Goodfellas.
Deep dive on Sopranos. Well, I just mentioned two mob things.
One time.
Yeah, I wanted to do a deep dive of Sopranos, but
Sopranos. Michael Franzese on.
We had him on. I listened to his.
Oh, that's right.
What was the last thing he did? Portrayal of the Mob in media. Yeah. I think it was his last video, because I do subscribe to him on YouTube. He's got some spicy opinions, that's for sure.
Goodfellas.
Are you back on Facebook?
No, it is. I am on Twitter right now, or X.
I got a
apparently
tweet.
It is a global.
Good.
Everyone across the globe logged out of Facebook and Instagram.
The globalist of one.
And Messenger. Anything with Meta.
Ooh, not very good.
So
that Elon's loving it right now. Also, Zach Wasink told me about it. I hope I'm saying your name right, Zach. Thank you very much. So I got one little bone to pick about Goodfellas.
Okay.
And it's at the end. It dawned on me, what he says, I put this out on social media. He says egg noodles and ketchup. But he served egg noodles and ketchup. And I was upset with that, but I also thought about it a little bit differently. Where do you think that Henry Hill was at the end of that movie when he was in witness protection?
I thought the newspaper was the Vindicator, no? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I thought Youngstown.
You assume Youngstown.
Yeah.
Everybody assumes Youngstown because it's the Vindicator. Unless you're not from the area and you don't know what the Vindicator
Newcastle.
Is. Yeah, yeah.
You say they got one out there.
Yeah. Although back then, people would get newspapers delivered to them from all over the country.
They would. Well, I think as the story goes, the costume director, set director, something like that, they just went to a newsstand and they got one. And that's okay, it's the Vindicator, there it is.
All right.
Like, that's basically like luck of the draw. No, I think he had Ohio plates.
Okay.
As the story goes. God, the guy who made Youngstown Still Standing tells the story, and I'm sure I'm butchering it. But he had Ohio plates. And it's because they had Ohio plates, the guy just went to the newsstand and goes, give me any Ohio paper. And the first Ohio paper that they had at a New York newsstand was the Youngstown Vindicator. Grabbed the Vindicator, wrapped it up, drove over to, I think they filmed it in Jersey that day, and that's where it was. So my issue of it is not just the egg noodles and ketchup, because my wife's from Youngstown. I'm struggling here because if I said, after I went to a restaurant in Trumbull or Mahoney County, Youngstown's in Mahoney, but if Niles, Warren, Youngstown, I'd be willing to go as far as Columbiana, but not really.
Canfield.
Yeah. If I were to go to any one of those places and I said that I was served egg noodles and ketchup, I think somebody would try to stab me.
Yeah.
Because they take it that seriously. However, I've heard Youngstown people be very critical of some of the restaurants in Youngstown. Like the Italians in Youngstown be critical of other Italians. Also, there's another thought to this. So, I first of all, I think Henry Hill shouldn't get away with saying that. Or the character Henry Hill. I don't know if the real Henry Hill said it, but sadly both the character and the guy are dead. There's another thing to it. In the movie, he says he has Pittsburgh connections. Okay?
Yes.
How does a guy who has Pittsburgh connection and then turns state's witness ends up being in witness protection in Youngstown, Ohio?
It wouldn't last very long.
No, you wouldn't. No, you
and
wouldn't.
And that's along the pipeline.
There's
you got bad guys crossing right through 80.
Yes. In one of the greatest movies ever made, there is a loophole in the story where there is no way. Like, if I guess you could request it if you were Henry Hill, but the FBI would go, I don't think this is a good idea, Henry. I really think this is a bad idea. So there's a loophole, even in one of the greatest movies ever made, that you wouldn't be witness protection in Youngstown.
No.
Nobody associated with organized crime would ever be in witness protection in Youngstown, Ohio.
You would be going to New Mexico. You would be going somewhere out west or the Pacific Northwest. You would not be heading right down the corridor, the mobster corridor.
Yes. It makes no sense.
Where Jim, the one place they'll never fuck right underneath
Jim,
their noses.
Jim Trafficking is giving you a handshake
exactly.
as you come into the town.
Exactly. Jim Trafficking might lead you into a closet, allegedly. Like, you can't do that. Now, I understand there's differences in how much it might still be active, not active at all, which I'm sure they'd rather you just believe that it's not active at all and that's it. No matter where it is in the country. But even at that time, this is supposed to take place. Like, he's supposed to be in witness protection in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. I think it's how this story goes. So, yeah, at that time, man, definitely it was active. This is before Phil Gaines got shot, Paul Gaines got shot. This is before everything. Like, what are we doing here?
What about Chris Gaines?
Chris Gaines has never been fired at.